Welcome to the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Joe Masato, joined by Barry Trammell, here to recap the Thunder's 118-109 win over the Atlanta Hawks on Friday night at Chesapeake Energy Arena. But before we get into the game, I always like when there's something that happens in the game that seems to be the bigger story than the actual result, or everyone's talking about this other thing that is only semi-related to the game. And this one was quite evident from the opening tip. You had the Atlanta Hawks in their red uniforms. You had the Oklahoma City Thunder in their sunset orange uniforms. And everyone knew something was wrong right away. It's like, who in the heck let this happen? Why did they schedule this game this way? And then hear from a Thunder spokesman at halftime. Just a heads up, we're switching into our white uniforms for the second half. I've never covered a game where that's the case. It seems like something that would not happen at the NBA level. Barry, what did you think of the jersey situation?
Well, I thought it was absurd from the start. You're at the arena. I watched on television. And, you know, what did it look like in real life? Live, what did it look like?
Well,
How similar were they?
Very similar. So similar to where, like, you know, I clearly felt the need to, like, tweet at tip-off, like, hey, something's not right here. Like, I mean, everyone in the arena noticed it right away. I was talking to Cliff Brunt from the AP. He's like, what's going on here? So it was obvious that, like, why is this happening?
Well, it's obvious on television. I mean, it would have been one thing if the Hawks were, like, deep red, if they were, even if they were Oklahoma Crimson or Texas A&M Maroon. No, they're Coca-Cola red. It's bright red. Thunder's wearing bright orange. You know, you don't, it's like blue and purple. You know, blue doesn't play purple. It's not the way you do it. And as soon as I saw it, I paused the game. I had to watch it late, and I flipped it on. They come out for the tip-off. I paused it. I got Trish the Dish to come in here. She's a connoisseur of uniforms. I said, look at that. You ever seen anything like this? That's crazy. And she was appalled as well. I mean, it's absurd. It looked like something you'd see maybe in a third grade game out at the Optimist Club gym, you know, where everybody's got one uniform and, you know, you pick whatever color. And, you know, if they end up with the same. I mean, I thought it was ridiculous. Who's in charge of this here league? They just let the players do literally whatever they want to. What's next? Here's what's next. Duplicate numbers. They're going to let maybe SGA and Ty Jerome can wear the same number because they want to. Is that what we're going to do next? For crying out loud. So everybody's got 17 uniform combinations. Why can't you pick two that are a little bit opposite?
We just need to have a whole podcast where you just rant for about 25 minutes about this uniform.
I will say this, St. Joe. I will. You're fairly new to the NBA beat. This is your second season. You might could cover the league for another 60 years and never see another game where there are more uniforms worn than referees calling the game. It was 3-2. We had three uniforms and two referees on the court tonight. Yeah. So, you know, you can go a long time and not see that in an NBA game, maybe for the next 60 years. So, I thought it was interesting, Mark Daigneault telling us at halftime two things. One, when he said, you know, this was an NBA mandate. Apparently the NBA called and said, what are you guys doing? but that was the second craziest thing. The craziest was when Daigneault said, I didn't really notice it. He didn't notice. What was he watching?
Well, did you hear Lloyd Pierce about it?
No, I didn't hear. What did Lloyd Pierce say?
He was asked about the uniform situation, and he said, "What uniform situation?" He said he didn't even notice the Thunder changed at halftime.
Now that's funny. That's funny. Oh, that's funny.
I mean, I was not on his post-game Zoom, but apparently he was not in a very good mood about the effort his ball club put forth. So
I wouldn't either.
So he didn't want to really talk about this trivial uniform situation. But yeah, I thought it was interesting. Both coaches didn't even seem to think it was a big deal. But I want to dive a little deeper into this, because as far as who's in charge here, it's a good question. So as you know, in the old days, not so far removed from these days, the home team usually wears white, the road team can wear its color, and you don't have situations that can get confusing. But now every team has about five or six uniforms, and the home team, there's no home and away. You get to
right. They got, was it 3 years ago, I think they dropped that, where you can basically wear what you want.
It's called like the statement and icon and city. Yeah. And
I think, you know what, I think it was jealousy from the league about the Lakers, because the Lakers didn't have a white.
Yeah.
They wore their purple on the road, and they wore their gold at home. And then they wore Sunday home games, or maybe all Sunday games, they wore white.
Yeah.
And I think other teams said, hey, why can't we do some of that?
Yeah. So and basically the home teams get to pick now from this wide array of uniforms, and the road team just picks something that doesn't match too closely with whatever the home team is wearing. And all of these, so you can go to, it's called Locker Vision. It's an NBA website. You can look at what the Thunder is going to wear. I don't know if the second half schedule is up yet, but weeks in advance, you can tell what the uniform matchup is going to
really
be. And I will say this one, for them to think that this is just all of a sudden happened, this was actually like scheduled well in advance that this was going to be the combination tonight, which makes it sort of a bit of a.
So nobody's monitoring, in other words.
Yeah. So
for crying
something
out loud.
Something fell through the cracks, and the Thunder released this statement at halftime. The Hawks are wearing the incorrect uniform color for the game. The league process of inputting uniform colors should have caught the orange-red combo, but because the Hawks only have red uniforms on the trip, the Thunder will switch to white at the half. So they're basically saying it's a Hawks problem and that the league should have never let this happen. I assume the league has someone monitoring this Locker Vision website and making sure that it's going to be okay. I just think it's a fascinating story. It also seems like, I don't know if it was like, do you think the league mandate was probably to help fans complaining on TV more so?
Yes. Because on the ESPN crawl, it says something like, Thunder changes uniform at halftime. After something like
a mid out cry,
the uniforms were too similar for television viewing or something. Okay. It makes a reference to television. It doesn't make a reference to, you know, one team not knowing who to pass the ball to. Kenrich Williams sort of came clear. He came clean with you when you asked him about it. And he said something like, yeah, it was sort of tough because you'd look and say, oh wait, he's not on my team.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what basketball practice used to be like when you didn't play shirts and skins. You know, I've been in games where guys didn't want to play shirts and skins, and about, you know, 30 seconds into the game, somebody stops and says, somebody take your shirts off. We're playing shirts and skins. That's what the Thunder should have done. They should have just said, all right, Atlanta, you don't want to follow the rules. You don't want to do what you're supposed to. We're going to play skins. And it was crazy, you know. And in all seriousness, now St. Joe, in all seriousness, this is a problem for colorblind people. This lack of white uniforms.
Yeah.
All this red and blue stuff, and green and black, and red and black, whatever. Colorblind people have a devil of a time watching an NBA game. Because without a white uniform, it tends to all look alike.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was an issue. And, like, obviously this one was an issue, even if you can't obviously tell them apart. I thought, you know, because I was wondering the whole game, like, okay, we're us as viewers are clearly noticing this. But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is not confused as to whether, you know, Kevin Herter or Théo Maledon is on his team. Like, everyone knows who to pass the ball to. It's not a confusing situation in that sense. And Shai sort of downplayed it when I asked him about it after the game, but he did say, like, in your peripheral vision, it does sort of mess with you. Like, if you see this streak of orange or streak of red, you might not exactly know who's to either side of you. And he said that went away in the second half, so it was easier. So now, both teams had 10 turnovers, so kudos to them for not passing it to the other squad. But, you know, it was the coaches acted like it was no big deal. I thought the players were a little better on it, but what a bizarre night.
Yeah, it was. It was very strange. And, you know, if the Thunder had worn their blue, you know, or even their black, you know, the city edition stuff. But, yeah, when it I have literally never seen – I've seen some bad combinations here since they deregulated the uniforms 2 or 3 years ago. That was literally the worst I've ever seen, red and orange.
Yeah. The only further step is to wear the same color. So
yeah, you could wear your, you know, they ought to just wear the same colors and just make it sort of part of the act, you know, and just see how many times you can throw the ball to the other team. But yeah, it was very strange. And, you know, as soon as one thing I did wonder about the Thunder in their whites, they didn't look exactly proper. Or I mean, I thought maybe some of the auxiliary stuff, like some of the leggings or some of the,
yeah, the bands and stuff,
the stuff they have, the accessories, shall we say, didn't exactly look normal to me. So I wonder if they just went with their normal accessories that they wear with the orange. And it was individual guys, like it wasn't everybody, but like, you know, Lou Dort wears the long leggings and other guys don't. Isaiah Roby to me is the guy that sort of looked odd with his wardrobe. I don't know what was going on. And I may just be making this up.
I was just wondering if they were going to have a Ty Jerome jersey in a different color, or if they had to.
So, well, yeah, they're lucky they got everything ready for that. Because, you know, if somebody calls and said, "Hey, Ty Jerome's going to play tonight," the equipment guy said, "Oh, okay, we're wearing orange. Let's get his orange one ready. We don't have to get the white one ready until whenever." But somebody was on the ball.
Yeah.
So that was good.
Yeah. So because some people do keep track of this, and so I'm going to ask you if you're counting the Thunder's record in what as to what uniforms they wear, do you give this win to the white squad, or do you have to split it?
Well, you have to go with you have to resort to baseball and starting pitchers. You know, what's the situation when it leaves the game? And the Thunder had an 8-point lead at halftime. Come out, and the white jerseys never give up the lead. So I think you clearly give the orange the victory, and you give the white the save. And so it's got the first – that's the first uniform save in NBA history, probably, for all I know. And, you know, you're going down the road. So I think clearly orange gets – orange gets the victory. I don't think there's any doubt about that. For
I like that.
See, they played well against the red, the orange and reds. So
yeah,
you know, kudos to them.
Yeah. Well, I was actually going to give the win to the whites, since that's what actually clinched it. But I think you make a valid case. We'll give the
whites. Well, I mean, I sit here popping off about the pitchers and all that. You got to go the five innings. You got to go more than half the game, and the oranges only went half, four and a half. They didn't go four and a half innings. So I don't know, for crying out loud. I'm just, I just think it's odd that, you know, you needed somebody in Secaucus to call in and say, "Hey, somebody do something about this." So you're telling me that Hawks left home with only one uniform?
Yeah, I also kind of don't believe that. Maybe the rest were at the hotel. I don't know.
Yeah, that's odd. That doesn't that strike you as odd too? That's, I mean, what yeah. happens if you know I what mean, happens if?
Why would you need to bring more than? Well, they. I have no idea. This is I think there's a story to be done about the Hawks equipment. Guy, whoever that is.
Yeah, somebody was not following the rules or the demands of fashion, either one. But
I was still surprised they actually changed it, though. Like, you play a half in them. It worked. I was still surprised. I thought that was the best part of the whole thing.
Yeah. What intrigued me again is that the league said it. The players.
Yeah. Dagnall called it a mandate.
Yeah, he did. And, yeah, not a, I don't, I think he's being too official. I think what he really meant was they didn't really suggest it. They just said, do it. So, you know, I'm just glad they did because, when you watch it, we see so few white uniforms. Like I'm watching clips right now and you got Indiana Gold against Boston White on my TV right now. And until white uniforms get out there, you forget how valuable they are and what a contrast they are to whatever other color there is. We say so little of it. What would you say? The Thunder's worn their whites 3 or 4 times this year out of 30 games or 32 games? Probably something like that. I mean, it's by far their least used, I think. They got the blue, the orange, the blacks, or gray, whatever you want to call that thing. And, you know, they just sort of left the white. Now, I'm all for mixing it up and saying you don't have to wear the white, you know, every game at home. You know, give the home squad a chance to see the orange or the blue or the charcoal. But let the home team decide. Sort of like they do in the NFL where you got the, you know, the Dallas Cowboys, for instance, prefer to play wear white at home. But this idea of, you know, never seeing the white, oh, man, that gets old fast.
Yeah.
It gets old fast.
Well, let's
I wanted to write about NBA uniforms coming up soon, and it wasn't even this issue. I think there's another scandalous thing going on, which is they all have too many uniforms, and you don't know who's who anymore.
Well, someone mentioned that as part of this. I think it might have been J.A. Adonde. There was a much Twitter outlash at this. It's like, can this just be a reminder that, like, sometimes you turn on a game and until you look at the bottom, you don't know exactly who's playing immediately.
Did you see who was it? Was it the Nuggets the other night? I think it was the Nuggets. Looked just like the Jazz.
Those red ones?
Yeah, that gradual change in red.
Yeah, exactly.
Top to bottom. You look at that and you think, well, that looks like the Jazz and that dang court they got and their uniforms. And when you turned on the TV and the Thunder was wearing, you know, green uniforms with classic white striping, you wouldn't think it's the Thunder. You'd think it's the Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're seeing a little bit of that with some of these psychedelic uniforms. You know, I think you said it a few weeks ago when the Thunder trotted out those city editions or whatever they are.
It kind of reminds you
of the Blazers.
Yeah,
it looks like the Portland Trail Blazers. So how about we quit? You know, let's do this. Let's switch the jerseys after the game. When the game's over, everybody switch jerseys. But before the game, everybody wear the colors you're supposed to wear.
Well, what I'm hearing is stay tuned for Barry's uniform column because I, for one, am looking forward to it. I mentioned Ty Jerome earlier. That was not I did not misspeak. Ty Jerome did play for the Thunder tonight. He made his Thunder debut. He injured his ankle, a pretty severe left ankle sprain, on the first day of training camp, missed all the preseason, missed the regular start of the regular season, goes down to the G League bubble, is basically a rehab assignment, starts to play a little bit there, and then if you're wondering about the timing of them calling Ty Jerome up to the Thunder, Mark Daigneault said it's directly related to the Hamidou Diallo injury. Diallo has been already ruled out for Saturday's game against the Nuggets. He's probably going to miss the rest of the first half. That's only 3 more games due to right groin soreness. So Ty Jerome basically filled the Hamidou Diallo role. I mean, very different players as far as how they play, but as far as playing time goes, Ty Jerome played 22 minutes tonight. He was 4 of 7, finished with 9 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds. Barry, I think the last time the both of us talked together about Ty Jerome is in Columbia, South Carolina, when we saw Virginia beat OU in the second round of the NCAA tournament on the way to Virginia's national championship. That was a Ty Jerome team. So what did you see this time around from Mr. Jerome in his Thunder debut?
Well, he's not flashy. He's not a, he's sort of the anti Hamidou Diallo.
Yeah.
Really fundamental, doesn't make any spectacular plays, but seems to make the right play a good part of the time. I was impressed with him. The only thing that kept him from a triple-double was playing time. You know, if Daigneault had played him a little bit more, played him 32 minutes instead of 22 minutes, he might have had a triple-double.
Yeah. I would say he's Teo Maladon is probably the best comp as far as on the team. As far as
Yeah, that little bit. Yeah, that's probably true. So I was impressed with him, you know. The Hawks and the Thunder. Hawks aren't going to beat the Thunder very often when the Thunder has the better Virginia Cavalier on the court because, you know, DeAndre Hunter didn't play for Atlanta. Ty Jerome did, played well. That puts the Hawks in a hole. So I was impressed. Frankly, everybody looked pretty good against the Hawks, which is an indictment of the Hawks.
The defense, the Hawks' defense was just –
They turned it
up in the fourth quarter. I'll give them credit, but it was horrible for three quarters.
I mean, they made Darius Bazley look like, you know, who I don't know who.
Insert great basketball player.
Yeah, that's right. I'm trying to think of a power forward who's really good at, you know, facilitating and doing all that stuff. But Bazley, his career looked over two nights ago. He looked like, well, he's not good enough to play in the G League. So what are they going to do with him? And he had a great game, 18 points, 12 rebounds, missed four shots. Lou Dort outscored Trae Young. You know, good luck winning that game, Atlanta, when that happens. Maladon had 12 assists. You know, when Teo Maladon and Ty Jerome combined for 19 assists, not trying to take away from the Thunder and their performance, but that's on Atlanta. You can't let Teo Maladon and Ty Jerome combine for 19 assists. So,
the Thunder has the second worst offense in the NBA, and it made them look like a juggernaut.
Yeah.
Tonight.
And by the way, Gilgeous Alexander was superb again. So, it was an offensive. Here's the shooting by quarters for the Thunder. 13 of 24, 14 of 21, and 11 of 20. That's their shooting by quarter until the fourth quarter when they sort of fell off.
But, yeah, I mean, they were shooting, 60% at halftime, I think.
Yeah. And then we're up over 50% for the third quarter. So, they were 38 of 65 going into the fourth.
Yeah, and tons of points in the paint. Like, it wasn't they did shoot it well from three, but they got a lot at the rim. Now, the Hawks also had a ton of points in the paint. If you guys have been following the Thunder this season, that's a pretty constant theme every time Al Horford sits. Let's go to – you mentioned Bazley and Maladon both stood out to me, Bazley because he has been in such a slump, and I don't even know if you call it a slump, just the whole year has been sort of – mostly down with just a few ups. But he 8 of 12, 18 and 12. And then Maladon, you mentioned 13 and 12. He tied Russell Westbrook's Thunder rookie record for assists, which is quite impressive. But I mean, he continues to play well. I thought you're right, though. If you're getting beat by Ty Jerome, Darius Bazley, and Teo Maladon, and you have playoff aspirations, something is not right, but
no, yeah, and you know, to me, it's a little bit scary for the Thunder. I got a friend. Every time the Thunder wins, he sends me a text. Too good to tank is what he always sends. Those four words: too good to tank. You know, I don't know what he's doing on the games they lose. I mean, they clearly aren't too good to tank. However, he does have a point in that. The rest of the league is too bad to tank. the Thunder play some teams that, you know, they just beat in spite of themselves. I mean, Atlanta is a team trying to win. They're a team that has playoff aspirations. And they're just basically a sieve on defense. They can't stop anybody from doing much of anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know what to say about them. You got a team that's trying. The Hawks are trying, and the Thunder's not in terms of roster construction. And they got the same record, 14-19.
Yeah, I mean, I think you picked the Thunder to win like what, 15 or 16 games this year. I think
they're going to have to
20.
They're going to have to hit a bad slump for me to get close. They're going to have to. They're going to have to slump badly.
To opt out of the second half.
Yeah, they're going to have to find somebody below Ty Jerome to play some of these minutes.
The only thing I will in the Hawks' defense of their lack of defense, DeAndre Hunter is a terrific defensive player. Chris Dunn's a really good defensive player.
Cam Reddish.
Reddish, you know, they are missing a lot of pieces, and they've been hurt by a ton of injuries. Bogdan Bogdanovic is an offensive player, but they're also missing him. And it seems like when one guy is out when one guy's healthy, another guy goes out. Trey Young, apparently, Lloyd Pierce and Trey said in his post game that Trey hurt his foot during the game and also hurt his groin. So dealing with a couple injuries, he sat for like a 9-minute stretch spanning the third and fourth quarters and didn't look particularly sharp. And when we talk about the Hawks' defensive woes, it obviously starts with Trey Young. What'd you think of Trey tonight, Barry?
He did not look good, I didn't think. He didn't seem to penetrate as well as he usually does. His shot's clearly off. He's, you know, he's 3-9 on three-pointers. That's not, you know, it's not like he shoots 44%. But he didn't seem himself. He got into the lane some and didn't know what to do. But he frankly, you know, his numbers weren't terrible other than the shooting. He's 7 of 21. That's not good. But he had only 3 turnovers. That's fewer than normal. He had 8 assists, 6 rebounds. So he does so much for them that he ends up with a lot of numbers. But I just didn't think he looked a little confused on offense sometimes getting into the lane. And the Thunder did a pretty decent job on him. Of course, you know, a lot of people end up pretty frustrated when Lou Dort covers them up the bulk of the game. So, it was not a great homecoming for Trey. He's on a team that's got some issues that's going to have to, it's going to have to be resolved.
Yeah. The big numbers for the Hawks tonight came from their big men, John Collins, who knows, it seems like he's now for the last 2 seasons has been in the middle of trade talks, whether or not he's the right fit there, and playing alongside Trae Young, everything to do with that. He's a terrific young player, but I don't know about the fit. 25 points, 8 rebounds tonight. He was quite good. Clint Capella, holy cow, without Al Horford in the lineup, 17-21. Pretty good night from Mr. Capella.
Yeah, he's an interesting player, and he had what, 4 block shots too. So I thought Capella was really good, and 9 offensive rebounds, 8 of 11 shooting. He struggles at the line, 1 of 4, but a really good player is Clint Capella. We saw that in Houston. We're seeing it in Atlanta. I think he's probably pretty frustrated at some of this defensive stuff that he's seeing. Yeah, he cleaned up, but good for the Thunder to win without Al Horford on a night when you're playing against John Collins and Clint Capella.
Yeah, and, you know, the Hawks just have no rim protection when Capella sits. Onyeka Okongwu, who was there, I think he was the 6th overall pick in the draft, he's not playing a ton. He only played 4 minutes tonight, but he's definitely a project and, you know, on kind of a Hawks team that's trying to win now. Obviously, they'd like to see something from him and continued progression in his rookie season. Want to mention one other Hawk because he got a rousing ovation tonight from the Oklahoma City faithful fake crowd noise. Danilo Gallinari, coming off the bench for the Hawks, was just 2 of 8, 0 of 3 from 3, 8 points. It's been a really down year, probably the least productive year of his career offensively. And I'm saying this fully knowing that he scored 38 points Wednesday night and set a Hawks franchise record with 10 three-pointers. So that was really cool to see for Gallinari. That certainly did not continue tonight. So I don't know quite what's up with him. He's also dealt with some injury issues as well, but I wouldn't be particularly worried about how he's shooting the ball in a night-to-night basis. But, he certainly could be a good option for them off the bench and certainly a guy that can put up big numbers.
He did not look good to me tonight. He looked a step slow, a little bit he didn't look quite as confident as I remembered him being when he was with the Thunder. So I don't know. It's a case of I don't know if he's not getting adjusted to Atlanta that well. I don't know if he's reached that threshold. There's talk that, Gallinari is, he's now 32, I think. Was he 31 or 32? So he's, is he reaching that line where that's going to be a problem? So I don't know. But he certainly didn't seem like the Gallo we saw a year ago here in Oklahoma City. We know he can still do it. He did it, 2 nights ago.
Well, but we did see like one of the best versions of it. He had one of the best years of his career with the Thunder. So that is the Gallo we remember, which, I guess is a little unfair to think he could do that. But that's why the Hawks gave him a huge contract, 3 years, $61 million. It was actually a sign and trade. The Thunder get a conditional 2025 second round pick. We'll see what the heck that is. But they've invested a lot in him and in this team to be not playing so well.
Yeah, it's I'd like to watch Atlanta a little bit more when they have Hunter and Reddish. But it's not like they were playing a full Thunder team. OKC playing without what I would consider their second best and sixth best players, maybe fifth best, and Amadou Diallo. Al Horford, of course, being number two. Well,
George Hill, too.
Well, I'm not even counting George Hill. He's been out for so long. So that's a great point. Yeah, they're playing without three of their top seven players. So, there's really no excuse, I guess, is what I'm saying. Ty Jerome helped beat you tonight. So let's not shed too many tears for the Atlanta Hawks.
Do you think this is with Jerome, he was a first round pick by the Suns in 2019. It's interesting because you look back at the Chris Paul trade, every player in that trade was moved except for Ty Jerome. Ricky Rubio was flipped. Kelly Oubre was flipped. Even one of Barry's favorite players, Jalen Lecque, was subsequently
flipped. Maybe Westbrook.
In that Phoenix deal, I honestly don't know. So I'm genuinely asking you, I don't know what the Thunder thinks they have in Ty Jerome and if he is at any, I don't think he's a long-term fixture by any means, but it's seeing what he could be as a former first-round pick just a couple years ago.
Yeah. I think they're not sure and they want to find out, but I don't know that they've got a ton of optimism. If Teo Maledone was not on this team, or if, he's a second round pick who hadn't really shown much and ended up being in the bubble or in the G League bubble, they might be thinking, well, let's give a bigger run to Ty Jerome and see what he has. But when you watch Maledone and you watch Jerome, you mentioned it, they're similar players, but the truth is Maledone seems to be just a better player.
And
ahead of Jerome. And he's 2 or 3 years younger.
Yeah, so. and he has shot it better. I know it's a small sample. I don't I sort of regret that comparison. Just it was like it's comparing him to Diallo, whose minutes he's
taking. I think it's a pretty good. It's a good comparison.
But I think Valadon flashes like he throws some passes where you're like, wow, that's pretty special. So I like his passing upside better than.
Yeah. Well, I like everything about him better. I think they're similar. He's just better.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes that's the way it is. You know, sometimes guys can be similar. They're just one guy's better. One's an all-star. One's not. One's a rotational player. One's not. One's in the NBA. One's not. And if the Thunder didn't have a Maladon, you'd think, well, maybe Ty Jerome could help him out at some point. It's difficult to see a way in which both of those guys would help this team on a consistent basis long term.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah. What wanted to wrap up with this, I thought it was interesting, not a super important detail, but Al Horford, you can, if there's anything you can bank on with the Thunder, it's Al Horford sitting on the second night of a back-to-back. And then they threw a changeup tonight. Al Horford, the Thunder has a back-to-back Friday night against the Hawks, Saturday night against the Nuggets. Al Horford sits on the front end of it. I asked Mark Daigneault about it. He was like, I'm not even in on those conversations. That's like Al talking to the medical staff as far as how he feels. Some people speculating that it's because they want him to defend Jokic tomorrow, but that doesn't make a ton of sense to me because, like, does it? The Thunder's not in a position where they're trying to adjust Al Horford's rest to have the best chance at winning. I don't think that really follows with the organization's philosophy for this season. But what do you think that was about?
It's a great question. It's a great question, and I don't know the answer.
Do you think maybe it's the guard Jokic? I mean, that doesn't make sense to me, though.
No. Well, I mean, maybe they just thought, you know what, it's in our best interest if we don't make news by allowing Jokic to score 70 points on Saturday night. So better play Big Al. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's purely medical. Maybe it is. Maybe Horford said, you know what? You know, maybe he banged himself up jumping on that dog pile. You know, he's the second guy on the dog pile Wednesday night. Maybe he crunched a nerve or something. I don't know.
It could be simple. He could have woke up and felt tired this morning and be like, I'll take tomorrow night off instead.
They don't play Sunday or Monday, I think. Isn't that right? Sunday and Monday. So maybe they thought, let's give him two straight 2 days off. You know,
well, they're off until Wednesday.
Wednesday. So they got 3 days off.
They play Wednesday, Thursday, so he'll sit in one of those games and then the All-Star break.
Well, so they're not playing that much. Maybe they just think extended rest would be good for Al Horford. I don't know. Generally, you don't want to waste a Horford sit out by winning a game. So, but it happened, and that'll happen when you look at that Hawk bench tonight. Yeah, that's not much of a bench. I mean, Rondo and Gallinari and Solomon Hill, and then two guys nobody ever heard of.
I admittedly had to educate myself on Skylar Mays.
I don't know. Is he a two-way? Isn't he a two-way guy? Is he? I don't know.
I think so.
They had some deep bench guys that I don't know much about. But yeah, it was a rough outing for the Hawks. When Kevin Herter is your leader in minutes played, you know, it's probably not going to be a good day at the office for the Hawks.
No, it's a. No matter what uniform the Thunder wore, it just did not matter against the Hawks. On Friday night in OKC, we will wrap it up there because we've got another game to talk about here pretty soon. Thunder and Nuggets on Saturday night at Chesapeake Energy Arena. That ends the long homestand. And then the Thunder have two road games Wednesday and Thursday of next week. And then it's the All-Star break. So thank you guys so much for listening to the Thunder Buddies podcast. And we will talk to you on Saturday night.